Brunch is back, ladies and gentlemen, and Yelp Guest Manager is here to help the Sunday Funday crowd find your restaurant. Yelp Guest Manager is the no-fee way to fill your tables, so prepare to spend less. But you're also getting a whole lot more. We're plugging your restaurant into the biggest consumer network in the U.S., creating massive awareness with the folks looking to book now. Sign up for Yelp Guest Manager today to get delayed billing for 60 days to start the brunch season off right. Go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to grow your restaurant, not your expenses. Terms apply. Now here we go.
I mean, I'm very honored because I've got these CEOs that reach out to me and are like, when's the next one? And I want to invite my friend. I mean, it's humbling, right? How many times in your life do you get people at that level running $100 million brands that are reaching out to you and asking you to continue the thing that you start? That's an honor, right? So I feel very fortunate in that way and very blessed.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. We're better together. As an industry, there's nothing we can't accomplish if we work in collaboration with each other. But who's going to be that hero that brings us together? In Orange County, California, that hero's name is Steve Runow. Steve is the creator of the Restaurant Executives Luncheon, a monthly invitation-only event that brings together restaurant owners and operators in the spirit of community, collaboration, and education. Today we sit down to discuss what it takes to build something like this, and Steve provides the step-by-step process you can use to build something similar in your neck of the woods.
So, Josh, the Restaurant Executives Lunch was probably something that I thought about in seed form prior, but kind of almost happened by accident. So when it happened, I'll tell you that, and then I'll give you a little background on it. So when it happened, it was funny because it started because one of my good friends and colleagues, Anthony Mejia, who's actually the VP of IT over at Zippy's, formerly at Lazy Dog and BJ's, he asked me one day, hey, you want to go out to lunch? And I said, no, that'd be great. Can I invite a couple people? And so I just happened to invite 50 different restaurant operators and executives, and 9 of them showed up, and it was a great lunch that then kind of bled into more. So it was kind of in some ways accidental. But I think the reason it started prior to that was in my background, I've done a lot of networking groups. So people are probably familiar with things like BNI, Provisors. These are great networking organizations where you go and you meet with like-minded individuals to try to find synergies in the business that's done. Well, one of the things that I saw in these sorts of groups is, right, people want to connect with the brand leaders of whatever industry they're after, right? The C-level guys that make the decisions on whatever it is. And I think what I saw before that in these groups is that, all right, it's great to have these great partners. That's important on the level of who are the other salespeople that you can network with. But I also saw, all right, how do you get connected with and stay connected in a valuable way with these C-level execs, you know, guys and gals in a valuable way, right? And I think what I saw in those groups was that, all right, well, those guys don't want to attend just any event, right? But they want to attend something that is directly beneficial to them with minimal distraction. And I can kind of go into what that means, but that's kind of, I'd always thought, like, how do I create something that people that are decision makers would actually want to attend? And then when I went to that lunch with Anthony, it was kind of the impetus then. I didn't really realize it at the time, but it was the impetus for what this then became. So that's a little bit of background on it, just in general first.
And how about some background on you? How are you related to the industry? How did you come up in this area?
Yeah. So I grew up in Huntington Beach, Orange County. Actually, behind me is Laguna Hills, where I live now with my wife and my five children. But I grew up in Huntington Beach, always loved the restaurant industry, worked in the restaurant industry, joined as a member of the California Restaurant Association board about 7.5 years ago after an invite from a friend of mine, Michael Viola. And we said, you know, you should come on this board. And just like anything, you're like, what am I getting myself into, right? But as I progressed in that board and then with the work that I do, which some of it involves restaurant brands and restaurant groups, that background of just kind of working in restaurants, being part of CRA, really led me to have a lot of these great relationships with executives in the restaurant space, kind of from that, from my background and kind of some of the things I had done prior. Before I got into what I do now, for example, I was in restaurant technology for a little bit and made a lot of great connections, didn't stay in it more than a couple years, but really kind of helped me to see a lot of the issues that restaurants face, from large brands to mid-sized to independents. And that's where a lot of those initial relationships came from. But just to give some kind of overview on that.
You've done 30 plus of these launches, and we're going to dig deep into it. But before we do, I want to talk about the overall value proposition. So when I was on the board and the president of the California Restaurant Association's Los Angeles chapter, one of the things that we talked about constantly was engagement. How do you engage with restaurateurs in a way that will inspire them to take action? I think that there's this popular misconception that restaurant owners and operators are too busy or too disinterested in the idea of getting together. What has your experience been?
So if you talk to anyone today, yes, I think most people would say, well, I'm busy in my four walls. I don't have time to go outside, right? But really what that means is they're not finding things that engage them enough or give them enough value to make the time for it. However, great example, my last lunch, which was my 32nd one of these, I had one person driving 2.5 hours one way, 5 hours round trip just to come do this. And he's one of the most well-known influencers in the restaurant space, Sean Walchef. And then I had another gentleman who's a VP of HR at a brand in Sacramento who flew down from Sacramento just to come to that lunch, which was a whole day event, right? So I think it's like this, I think with anything in life, right? We don't know what we don't know. So as I've run these, and I've done 32 of them now, right? I think as people come, they resonate with whatever it is, that value that they're receiving, to be able to say, oh, this is actually valuable to come. And so some of them, Trey Hooper is a good example of CEO of Pepper Lunch. I mean, he got off of a plane in Long Beach and drove directly to one of my lunches, getting off of a plane. I mean, I wasn't trying to force him, but he did it. Why? He perceives that there's value. But I think with any of these guys and gals who's come to this lunch, I think they probably all have different reasons they attend. But I think one of those, and when you talk about engagement is, right, I think all of them realize that the industry now is a lot more difficult to succeed in than it might have been, say, 10 years ago, right? I mean, the minimum wage is about to go up to $20 in QSR, right, in California. It was $10 an hour, what, 10 years ago? It's a lot harder. I mean, that's twice the minimum wage already just in 10 years, right? So at these lunches, one of the things that I do to help kind of create value and engagement is moderating a Q&A that is solely dedicated to the questions that these specific brands and operators face on a daily basis. Not my question, not someone else's question, not a sponsor's question, their questions. And I think when they're able to engage with other leaders, and then what I see, because I moderate every single discussion, right, is I see they start discussing on problems they're having, and they're all having similar issues. So then they start to see, well, okay, so-and-so is also having that issue. How did you attack it? What are you doing? And then I think there's these great partnerships and collaborations and discussions that take place that then they seem to really resonate with. And so when you talk about engagement, I think that's one of the big pieces. I didn't have that at the beginning. It's one of the things that kind of slowly got built in. I see it. I mean, I see the CEOs and CFOs and VPs and directors really engaging and then continuing those discussions and saying, hey, well, what are you doing at your brand to solve this? What are you doing, right? I mean, I always tell people, even at the lunches, it's not about giving away your trade secrets, right? But it's about how does this industry move forward together in a positive way? And I think my members that attend have really taken that upon themselves. And that's what drives this thing, right? I mean, that's why I get 30, 35, 40 people to attend at a given lunch. I mean, I can't force them, but they're engaging in a way that creates I can't wait for the next one. If I don't schedule a lunch like right away, I get all these emails. When's the next one? When's the next one? So they're definitely engaged, but I think that's a big part of it on that piece right there.
And is there a common thread across all attendees? Because you're talking about high-level executives, and then there are guys like Sean Walshif, who is truly an independent owner-operator. And so I would assume everyone has the opportunity to learn from everyone. I think that there are universal problems and universal solutions to so many of the things that we face foundationally. But are there common ideologies?
So, I mean, you mean on the invite list, like who's coming and things like that?
Yeah. Do all of these people kind of believe the same thing about the industry? Do they have a common worldview?
Oh, common worldview? I would say, well, at least from the Q&As, I mean, there's a lot of lively discussion, right? So I think everyone has the commonality that they're trying to succeed in the restaurant business and they're trying to do well by their people, right? They want to treat their employees well. They want to see their employees thrive. All of those, I think, are very similar. And I think that's probably the common worldview that exists amongst all the attendees. The specifics of like how they run their brand and the type of leadership and those things might differ. And there's a lot of great discussions. Some of the discussions there's a couple that have gotten extremely heated, not because people don't like each other, but because they passionately, I think that's one thing about restaurateurs that's great, right? There's a lot of passion because these people have dedicated their life to creating amazing experiences to their guests, right? I mean, that's something about hospitality. You're on the front lines and every single guest that they interact with at their brand is a chance to shine like a star or to look like they should be going out of business. So they're all very passionate, right? And so there's some passionate discussions. One of them took place about a year and a half ago on, I believe at the time it was kind of some of the laws that are kind of coming into play now and what the right way to go about those was. Do those couple brand leaders that were having that discussion dislike each other? No. But are they really passionate about how they felt the right way to move forward was? Yes. But they still both are very common where I want to create good value for my guests. I want to treat my employees well. I think that's probably the common thread is those things that I mentioned. But there's a lot of interplay of things that are maybe not agreed upon that allow people to kind of start to really kind of discuss those things. And I try to keep it as moderated in a way that keeps the conversation real, but allows everyone to say their piece. And I think people respect that because they know they're going to be heard, even if maybe not everyone agrees, but it opens up great discussions.
And what's the formula for the event itself? I would assume that you've ebbed and flowed over the years with this much time to chit chat, this much time to eat, this much time for Q&A, this type of Q&A. Like, what is the recipe that you've crafted that seems to work time and time again as it relates to the event?
Yeah. So it's an hour and a half event, right? Not a lot of time. Hour and a half in total. The first 20 minutes is kind of like this open networking where people are coming. Depending on if we're at a QSR, maybe they pay at that time. I'm giving them name tags so they all can see who's there and I'll list how many times they've attended so people can see like, oh, this is a veteran of the event or this is rookie or what have you, right? Then I'll take a group picture in front of the restaurant. We always want to highlight the brand and try to post those so that brand gets some love on LinkedIn, et cetera. And then at that point, it's about maybe like half an hour in and then we sit down, we'll order the food if we have to. And then I'll go around and I'll introduce everybody one by one, just briefly to kind of highlight here's who's here. Everyone gets to hear it. And again, how many times people have attended. It's definitely kind of changed because at first it was just kind of a brief intro. Now I have people stand up based on how many times they've been to the event. So it turns into kind of like a who's in first place, who's the veteran, right? Which is, it gives a lot of, I think also maybe in some way, there's a lot of pride for those who have come to a lot of events because the other people see them as like, all right, this is someone who's dedicated a lot of time to this. Why? And right? That even itself just helps with discussions that they might have on the side. After that, I have the brand do a little talk on the brand's history because I find not only do the leaders like hearing that story, but when I post those on LinkedIn, people love hearing that, right? They want to hear the backstory of a Wahoo's or a San Pedro Fish Market or a BJ's, right? And really connect with what are the roots? I think that just like we like movies, why do we like movies? We love stories. We love good stories. Same thing with business people, right? And then after that, there's usually about half an hour and that's where I do the Q&A. Where I basically take all the questions that people submitted prior. So I've got like a docket and I'll go through each question one by one. Some of them we don't get to. And for those that we don't get to, I'll create a LinkedIn thread for that specific question with whoever wants to be part of the thread. And then at 1 o'clock, I'll end the Q&A. At that point, people can stay. People can go, right? People are busy because it's in the middle of the day. And then the last part of the lunch is where I connect everyone on LinkedIn that attended the event so that everyone can continue connecting and dialoguing to the level they want with whoever was there, right? So it's every minute is kind of strategically focused. I don't have any sponsors on purpose. The attendees didn't want any. They like the fact that there's no agenda other than kind of the purity of the discussion they get to have, the brand story, and there's no outside third party coming to talk about anything other than what the brand leaders want to discuss, right? So it's been created in a way that's as focused. I mean, I had one president of a company who said, you know, I've been in the industry 19 years and I've never gone to any event that was just this focused on what the operators want.
It's amazing.
Yeah, pretty great.
But without sponsors, I would worry that it's prohibitively expensive.
At this point, no, but that's because partly I just make sure that the lunch cost gets covered, but each person is paying for themselves.
Oh, is that how it works? So each attendee is paying X amount to do it. So it's a break-even deal for you, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
Now everybody's wondering, everybody's listening and they're going, what's in it for you, Stephen? We're all restaurant people here. We know that nobody does anything out of the goodness of their own heart.
Yeah, right? Yeah. There's a lot of truth in that. Yeah.
But I think there's something to be said for your motivations. The reason I'm having you on the show is because I want this to exist at scale. I'd love to see this in every primary and secondary and tertiary market around the country.
Yeah.
I can tell you as a restaurateur myself, and I was well-networked. I've always been well-networked, but I always felt privately like I was on an island unto myself.
Yeah.
That no one was there to cheer on my successes, that my failures were private, and that there were no open lines for me to discuss my struggles. And this is very much that, which is a beautiful thing. But it's interesting that you're the person that created it. So why you, and what do you get out of it?
So I always joke that in any business, right, anyone that's selling a product, whatever it is, right? I always make the joke, but it's, I think, very real that nobody cares what you do. No one's sitting there like, please tell me. No one ever said that, right? But the way I look at business is very much that the way to create business relationships is to have a starting point where there's value for the person that you're trying to reach, whoever that is, right? Because if there's value, then there's able to be what I call, people ask me when they come to the lunch, so this question, they'll say, why do you do it, right? And I'll say, and I'll tie it into this. When you leave this lunch, I want you to look at me and think, Steve Rano's not an idiot. And they laugh and they say, well, that's of course, I think you're great, right? And I'm like, yes, but I need you to say at the end of this in your head, or I want you to, Steven Rano's not an idiot. Why? Right? Because now I'm already separated from every other salesperson that they think is an idiot, right? Because most salespeople to any executive is in some way that, don't bother me, leave me alone, I don't want to talk to you. So the way I look at it is, right, in business, if you want to thrive, part of that initial part is creating a relationship where you can pick up the phone and call someone and say, hey, I want to run something by you, right? Doesn't mean you're going to do business with everybody. But it means you have the ability to have a discussion on a peer-to-peer level where there's respect and trust and not, I've got to talk to someone that I just want to hang up on in 15 seconds, right? And I think that relational capital is extremely valuable and important because in business, right, the way I look at it is if I want to make a withdrawal, which is someone's time, someone's energy, mental energy, maybe even doing business, I need to have a deposit. Right? At least that's going to make it easier. Well, what's that deposit? In this case, I feel like I've been able to start something that is wanted by all of these people, whether they knew it before or actively or not. But now it creates this ability to call someone that comes to the lunch and say, hey, I want to pick your brain on something. I want to pick your brain on some of the people you know, or I want to pick your brain on your company. And there's no question. I mean, there's no question asked, right? Because there's a level of trust in that relationship. And I think that relational capital, in my mind, is extremely valuable, even if I don't do business with X amount of them, because there's no way to gain that. And I guess to tie it back, Josh, if I think of like a networking group, right? In a networking group, you're with your peers and you're all salespeople, but it's not like any of the clients of those salespeople want to talk to any of those other salespeople, right?
Sure.
So this is a way to kind of gain that access in a way where it's a two-way street, right? I'll never forget, for example, this is a great one. I'll never forget because all of my invites are direct from me, right? Direct. So no one on that invite list, if they're not on the invite list, they're not invited at this moment, right? So one of the presidents of a, I don't know, $250 million brand was coming to the lunch. And this was in the very beginning before I had things a little more organized. And they walked in, the president of this $250 million brand, and they said, "I am so sorry, Stephen. I brought my CFO with me today. Is that okay?" Now, I don't know how many worlds there are where people are apologizing to a salesperson for bringing their CFO to their event, right? But it's an example of the relational capital that can be built by doing something like this, right? And so that's, I would say, the initial piece that really I gained from it is kind of being known and respected as a peer and not just, oh, that's another annoying salesperson. To be fair, I also don't even pitch what I do at these events because, again, I don't have sponsors. I don't pitch what I do because it's not about me. It's not about anyone else. It's about these operators. And I think as they see the purity of that in the event, right, actions speak louder than words. So they see, oh, because you can imagine, I've had many people that didn't want to come for a long time. They're invited, but they don't come. And then they get hit up by their friends enough where finally they come to one. And then they'll come to me and be like, "This is really great." Right. But I mean, it's because they experienced it firsthand because in their head, they're like, "Oh, is this another event where I'm going to get pitched on something I don't care about?" Right.
Is there a sweet spot in terms of attendees?
So 20 is the least I've had. And then the biggest one I did was shout out to Wing Lam over at Wahoo's. He just broke the record. It was Pizza Press and Dara Maliki. I had 37, but then Wing, he had, I think, 42 or 43, 43. So Wing broke the record at Wahoo's. I think the attendees can kind of see this, but just based on introductions and then questions, more than 45 or 50 would be difficult, partly just because from a restaurant perspective, right, it's difficult to find a space where everyone can hear if there's too many people.
Sure.
Because restaurants already not the quietest place. And then if you have too many people sitting too far away from each other, they can't hear during the Q&A and then it takes away some of the value. So I'd say over like 45 to 50, my format wouldn't work. But between that 20 and 45 seems to work really well because everyone can be heard, the space fits, et cetera. And then the restaurants are big enough to be able to do it.
And is there a reason that you use different venues every time?
So I only host them at brands who have previously attended. So every single one of these, I'm still on round one, and round one being each restaurant is hosted now once at most, because I want to give everyone who can host, because not everyone has a space that will fit it, but I want to get everyone that can host the opportunity to host, but they have to come to one prior. And then typically this is for basically directors, VPs, and C-level, primarily of small to large chains, primarily. So for me to host at this point, not only does someone at that brand have to have attended, but then typically, let's say a VP of IT attends or a VP of ops. Well, then if they're going to host, I want the CEO to be there when they host because I want the CEO to give the story, right? And that's the person who's really the face of the brand. So typically that's how I would do it. So there's a couple steps. They've got to attend first. Someone's got to attend. And then I want one of their leaders there so that they can kind of be that conduit. And so that what I find is a really great way for these brands to experience different restaurants. I get to highlight different restaurants. Everyone gets a little bit of love because everyone's got a great story, a great product. And that's a great way. If I did it at one restaurant, I could do that, right? I could easily just go to the same one, but I don't feel like it gets the flavor out to the community or the attendees. Because part of this is to post on LinkedIn as well, right? So people get to see and to hear what that brand is all about. I feel it's a great way for that brand to get like some love and exposure.
What are the hurdles around building it and running it? Because I'm sure there are a lot of people listening that are pillars in their community that are well-networked that would say, "I would love to do this, but I'm sure it's a pain in the ass." I'm even thinking to myself, Stephen, this sounds like a pain in the ass.
It is a pain in the ass.
But what are the hurdles and what have you been able to overcome and streamline over the years?
So I think the biggest hurdles are that on day one, and again, right, I didn't start this with the intent of making it a thing. That first lunch, when I had those nine people, they came. And at the end of the lunch, they were like, "This was a lot of fun. When are we doing it again?" But remember, there was no like Q&A. There was no brand story. it was just bringing industry leaders together. But then as I continued to do it, I started to see what the roadmap was of what they wanted, right? But the hurdles are that on day one, there's no belief, right? Meaning you've got to get enough people in that room who want to come, that trust you, whoever that person is, and that want to take time out of their day. And that's almost impossible because everyone's super busy, right? And they want to know, like, why am I coming? Because even I had to, over time, add things that I could see people wanted that I didn't have there at the beginning. Because again, it really started organically. I didn't intend to do this. It took off, right? So the first hurdle is the belief, because most people will think, this is going to be a waste of my time. What value is there? Oh, this is just a... I think it's going to be hard for a lot of people to not have anything pitched, right? Because people are trained. Oh, I've got to pitch my thing in front of all these people, or I need to bring someone else that's going to pitch so they'll sponsor it. It's got to be pure, meaning no pitch. It's got to be no sponsor, because the second there's a sponsor, now you're beholden to the sponsor and not focused on what the restaurateurs or the brands want, right? And then there's also going to be people that want to attend that don't fit the mold, right? So if it's just director, VP, C-level, so I get a lot of, for example, I get a lot of these guys that will say, oh my gosh, I want to bring my GM. My GM would benefit so much from coming to this. I want to bring my consultant. They would benefit so much. Yes, they would benefit. But do these VP and C-level guys want to hang out with, no offense, right, with GMs and consultants? No, they could do that at any point during their week like that. They're coming because they want the other people that are running the brand at the same level. And so there's a lot of telling people no. Now, I think at first some people might get offended, right, when I would tell them that. But as soon as they saw why it was that way, I think everyone has kind of really respected the fact that it's that way for a reason. It's that way to keep the integrity of it so that they know that when they come, they're coming to deal with other leaders at their level or close to their level, right? But that is a challenge because there will be a lot of people that will say, well, why can't I come? Why can't, because everyone's, again, right? They're thinking about how does it benefit me only, not the group, right? And there's a lot of telling people no. I mean, there was one event I had someone come and they were on the list. They're not a restaurant executive. I had to kick them out and I had to do it a bit forcefully. And I think people were like, wow, the guys right there were like, that was forceful. And I was like, if I don't show that this thing is protected, I will have people stop showing up. And they won't tell me why they stopped showing up. They'll just be like, I don't need to go to that anymore. Because it's no longer what they see the value in it is, which is networking with their peers. Just like, for example, a Vistage group, right? Vistage does this on a large scale, CEOs, CFOs, et cetera. There's no one that's able to go to that meeting other than those people that are part of that group. This is a little bit more informal because obviously it's open to more people, but Vistage isn't letting in, like, when it's a CEO group, they're not letting in an employee of that company because it's about the CEOs being able to be together. It's really no different in this. It's just a little bit more broad as to who gets invited.
What's the time commitment look like?
It's a lot because I've got to dial in with the restaurant, right? Each restaurant, I have to convince them to do exactly what I know needs to be done. But some of it is counterintuitive to what a restaurant would do, right? So just for example, I have to have all these restaurants drop the check at a sit-down restaurant as soon as the food arrives. No restaurant ever in the history of the world is in practice of doing that because that's basically telling your guests, hey, leave, right? Well, I need that, and I know I need it because some people need to leave early, and they can't be waiting for their check because they get mad, right? So just the logistical part can take a little while because I have to make sure that the brand understands why certain things have to be a certain way. Then there's the other part of managing the invite list, making sure I respond to all the yeses, all the noes. As we get close to the event, I'll text every single attendee because who reads email, right? So I'll text every attendee with all the details they need because there's a higher probability they're going to read that text than an email that they're probably just going to get pushed to the bottom of their email list. So there is, I don't know, probably a good 10 hours a month that gets dedicated to kind of the managing of this in a way that make sure that nothing falls through the cracks.
And then if you had to build it from scratch today, knowing what you know now, do you think you could get it up and off to the races faster than it took to get the initial one off?
I mean, isn't that any business?
I would think so, yeah.
Right? If you start a restaurant, second one is always going to be easier because now you know, like, the lease that you need to avoid or whatever, the vendors you're going to use. right? So just the same way I think if someone's opening a second restaurant, they're going to have more knowledge than the first one, be able to do it easier, right? I think with this, it's the same thing, right? Because I know what the brand leaders find valuable at this point. You'd still have to fight the fact that people don't believe that it's valuable, right? Even today, if someone hasn't been to my lunch, they still probably think, because they tell me when they come to the first one, and I'll ask them, what did you think? And they're like, I always ask every single first attendee, what did you think? What did you like? What did you not like? What did you think could be better? And they'll say, like, I'm floored at what you're able to tie in an hour and a half that's valuable. The belief is the biggest thing that you can't overcome. But the logistical things, how to structure it, the level of being forceful with the restaurant even and setting it up in a way that's going to work for everybody and them, right? Because I want it to be valuable for everybody. But just all the logistics and then even how to manage the invites, how to send the updates, how to make sure they get the knowledge of the day, right? And read that text. I used to do email. No one reads email. Now I do text. They kind of read the text, right? So there's just ways, there's things that I don't need to happen that now if I was doing it again, I could do a lot better, but it's because of trial and error, right?
And if somebody listening wanted to start one of these tomorrow, what do you think would be a great first step for them?
I mean, first they need to actually ask themselves, do they have enough people in their network that would, if they reached out, right? Because even on that first one, I had 50 people I reached out to in my network that I could invite, even though it was informal. Do they have enough people in their network that would even respond and come? Because if they're like not even part of an industry, but they want to do it, you're only going to be able to get whoever knows you and already likes you to some extent, right? So the first challenge is, do you know enough people that would come, right? That would be the first thing. If there's not enough people, it's not going to work. And then the second part, because I see people make this mistake, is the second piece is, say they don't know enough people, right? And they want to get someone else's people in their network. Well, the more vendors that they get involved, or the more people that are not operators that they get involved, the more it's going to be something that is perceived as just a pitch and that no one's going to want to come to, right? The one thing that I've been able to keep this 3.5 years is I don't have a sponsor. I don't have anything. I don't have anyone that comes that isn't a brand leader. And again, that purity of kind of the group helps keep it focused on, there's no confusion. Hey, why is this other guy here? Well, I needed his network too, because I didn't have enough, right? So if you can't start it from your own network, it's going to be very, very difficult.
And what are your goals for the luncheon, for your career in 2024 and beyond?
So the luncheon, we'll see. We'll continue. I'll continue that. I mean, right. I mean, there's a lot of, like I said, at this point, I mean, I'm very honored because I've got these CEOs that reach out to me and are like, when's the next one? And I want to invite my friend. I mean, it's humbling, right? How many times in your life do you get people at that level running $100 million brands that are reaching out to you and asking you to continue the thing that you started? That's an honor, right? So I feel very fortunate in that way and very blessed. From a business standpoint, it's about connecting at a level where I can provide value to be able to continue to do what I do. I don't know how much you want me to kind of go into that, but in what I do, I work with a lot of larger brands. And basically, I work with, typically, it's their finance guy or lady. And I work to basically help save them money on one line item, sometimes two. It's the same line item for every client. And if I'm successful, the way it typically looks is they're going to save money on that line item with zero upfront cost, zero operational change, zero vendor change. It's not even that my sale is something where, hey, you got to implement something. I need one person at that brand and one person only, and that's their finance person. And so for me, to the extent that that lunch allows me to build those relationships with brands where I can do that, then it's serving in, right? When you ask, well, what do I get out of it? If it's serving that purpose, then it's valuable for me to continue running it, right? And fits into that world. But it is a very specific world because, like, I've got a client today and they're saving $50,000 a month. So they're going to save over the year $600,000. They didn't have to change anything about their business. But the only reason I could get to that company to do that is I got the CFO. And the only reason I could get that is I had enough relational, I don't know, pull to be able to get that discussion to happen in a way that now is very valuable for that brand. But I never would have even gotten the conversation started without that relational pull and respect first, right?
I want to end giving you an opportunity to speak directly to the audience. For those that are interested in building something similar, do you have advice or words of encouragement?
Part of it is having that network, right? If they don't have the network, they can't start it because you can't invite people that you don't know because they're not going to come, right? But I think part of it would also be, how does it fit into your model and what you're doing, right? Because the ideal world would be if you've got an industry that you're super focused in. So like someone who's selling directly only to restaurants, right? This is really valuable to do for them because they don't have it in many places, at least not in a way that, like you said, Josh, right? Not in a way that's just for the operators. Maybe it's for the operators, but it's also for the vendors. This is just for the operators. So they've got to be able to figure out a way to build it in a way that there's value for the operators. Otherwise, they're not going to come. They're just not. They're going to go to the Restaurant Leadership Conference, MERTEC, and these are great events, but it's because they're focused on the operator for the most part, right? And they're well-known, they're well-established, their friends go. So that's going to be really important, is the figuring out, well, what am I going to put in this that creates the value so that, and again, not the value that I want as the person building it, the value that they want, that the operator wants, right? Because otherwise it's worthless, right? If it's not valuable for Josh Kopel, the fine dining restaurant owner, bar owner, right? And that's the target of who you want to come, and Josh doesn't find it valuable, even in concept, you're wasting your time.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins, and the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie, and Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/fullcomp to learn more today. That's Steven Ronau. For more information on Steven and his company, be sure to check out his LinkedIn profile. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/fullcomp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Kopel. You've been listening to Full Comp.